Hello and welcome to the Little Minds Big Ideas podcast with the Early Years Network.
And a very croaky Emily.
Again, I'm very sorry.
There we go.
Apology. This week we have got quite a few little topics we want to talk about, haven't we?
We've got a bit of a mixture in our bag today.
Yeah, we have. Gone a bit different. So we wanted to start this week by talking about a couple of news articles that have come out the week that we're recording, so last week for you as you listen on Monday.
If you had to describe these two news articles, your two emotions that you feel from it, how would you describe your emotions?
The first one we're going to talk about, I'm not surprised. Like, it's just...
I'd describe it as grrr.
Like that.
You've got the voice for it.
And mine's just like, oh, what, like, it's the same thing, isn't it? Like, whatever. The second one is just pure, like, horror.
Off with her head.
Just horror. And it makes me feel sick.
No, it's awful.
So we're going to start with an article called...
It's not an article. It's technically a
government statement.
Read like an article, but it's actually a bit of propaganda for the government on the government's website.
On the government website, and it's called Landmark Childcare Rollout on Track.
Woo!
It's all in capitals. So I feel like they're really shouting at me. And it's basically talking about the new funding that's come out for two-year-olds and how amazing it's been. The process has been so smooth.
195,000 two-year-olds already benefiting from government-funded places.
And that how many are now in childcare and now are getting access to childcare.
It's like a massive congratulation, pat on the back for the government, isn't it? But in reality, of the what is it now, 195,000 they're saying have taken up on the offer of the two-year funding. Let's be honest with you, the vast majority of them were probably already in childcare.
Yeah, they were already in settings.
I'm sure some have picked up on it because they've heard about it and thought, oh, I'll be good to get them on there.
Majority will be already in settings because most settings are probably full. And they're now just thinking, oh, fantastic, my nursery bill's come down.
And it's celebrating the fact that it's been rolled out, it's been successful, it's been stress-free. Well, we know for a fact the first few weeks the codes are an absolute farce.
Yeah, it didn't work. Nobody could access the codes. The codes weren't right and they couldn't be checked.
Do you know what? Do you want to get to me with it? Because you're going to expect them to come out and say this. And yeah, it claims thousands of people come back to work again. No real facts or figures to actually support that or any evidence. Thousands of parents are returning to work. That's all that the Education Secretary, Gillian Keegan, said. But it just seems incredibly tone deaf.
It's so frustrating, though, because it's saying that in September 2025, how many more places are going to be
70
needed?
Or 75,000,
isn't it? That's great. Fantastic. But legally, from a square footage point of view, you can't fit more kids in the buildings.
So
how many new nurseries are you going to have to build? But how many have already just now gone bust because of the funding that's come in? Couldn't afford to run anymore.
And minimum wage this April has obviously shot up 9% again, which is leaving more pressure on. Yep.
Then nursery, what parents are paying is less because the funding's come in for two-year-olds and three-year-olds now. And then you've got the cost of everything going up to run a building. And then you've got all the other aspects of it. But then in 2025, you've got
70 to 75,000 more
new places needed.
Yeah.
We've already said, like, the majority will probably be babies because of the funding is coming into. Fine. And, like, that is what it is. That's great. But babies are on a 1-to-3 ratio. So how many staff members is that?
You realistically are going to be looking at needing another 20,000 members of staff to support that extra 70,000 children.
Now, if majority of these are babies, they're going to need baby experience and baby training, and they're going to need to be 50% of them qualified.
10,000.
So we've got...
How long does it take to qualify these days?
A level 2 is a year and a level 3 is 18 months.
So we're already
past... We need to crack on now.
Level 3.
So everybody needs to be training now to be in those rooms ready for those children, and the buildings probably need to start being built.
Yep.
Because I don't think you can whack up a building.
Depends where we go put them. Breeze blocks, you can get some buildings up quite quick.
I think it's just... Parents reading it will be like, oh, fantastic. Well, great articles. All work smoothly. Yeah, great.
Do you know
people in the industry, that's why I'm just like, oh, whatever. Like, you're just talking nonsense.
Do you know what it feels like? It very much feels like, how can we get some really good propaganda out there pre-election? Because election's looming.
Mm-hmm.
That benefiting parents, get parents back to work, try and get more money in their pockets. Obviously, the cost of living is sky high at the moment.
how can we get more money back into parents' pockets to encourage them to spend and also make us look good in the process?
Yeah.
Without actually thinking, holy shit, what are we going to do to this sector by doing this? They're not thinking long term.
Have we discussed actually that while we were at the Childcare Expo the couple of months ago?
We were. Feels like a lifetime ago.
Excuse me. Yes, it does. And one of our team went and spoke to the Department for Education stand.
Was it Department of Education or Ofsted stand?
No, it was a Department for Education stand.
Oh, right, okay.
About, she said, I just want to go and ask them a few questions. And I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast.
Oh, I remember.
And she went across and asked, why on earth are you calling it free childcare? Because you know as well as I do it's not free. And this person's response was, it's just a marketing tool from the government.
Yeah.
They know full well what they're doing.
Yeah, sounds great.
In fact, he told a member of our team it's a marketing tool.
Yep.
And I don't think we've ever discussed this.
No, but it evidently is.
Yeah, but that's even worse. I'd rather they have been so far away from it and gone, oh shit, no, it isn't. You're right. It's not free. I wouldn't have thought about that. To actually stand there and say, oh no, it's a marketing tool. Sorry, what a kick in the teeth for the industry,
though. It's the fundamental issue that is unfortunately wrong with our political system.
Yes,
and,
I know.
And then there's not a guaranteed easy answer, because if you then go the other way, you think, right, how can we get longevity in place for 10, 15 years? You go down a dictatorship and then you get all the issues you get there. So like, but no, unfortunately, you do get to a scenario.
I think it's more the fact that he stood there and said, I know it's not free, you know it's not free, but we have to market it. He's like, government funding shouldn't be fault. Like, that's just false advertising. And it's a, like, I just think
it's not
really
false advertising, is it? Because technically, what they are trying to do is make that level of childcare free for the parent. It's missing for the parent off the back of it.
Yes.
Free childcare for the parent.
Yes, but then you've got the additional add ons that they never talk about.
But they are desperately trying to iron them out. So things like set-off sessions and things like that, they're desperately trying to get it to the point where you can't charge for them.
Yeah, I know.
So they are trying to food and things like that.
I just really cross that he was like, yeah, that's just a marketing strategy. Like, oh, that makes me so cross, because you're not even putting in the fine print about all the other stuff. Like, you're not putting...
But that's just their prerogative. They want to appear as if they're doing a great thing for parents. They're trying to save money for parents. They're trying to put more money into the economy without actually putting more money into the economy, just by saving it and providing parents with that extra income so that it spends more and generates the economy to start
moving.
Unfortunately, though, all sounds great until you think about, well, actually, what you're doing to that industry. You know, what are you doing? Because
at the end of the day, it's just going to be the children that lose out.
In the long haul, yeah, absolutely.
Because,
because if you price fix like they are doing, then you stop growth, but then you're forcing 9% increases on salaries every year with a 1-2% at very most increase into funding. I mean, if you're a preschooler the last 5-10 years, I'd love to know how you survived.
Yeah, no.
Because the growth and the rate of growth of minimum wage versus the funding, and funding for a preschool is pretty much their only source of income, or at least probably 80 to 90%. How the hell do you operate? Like, where?
I don't know.
Does the money come from?
I don't know. But so that was the first article.
That was, yes, a bit of a puff piece.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When you said, what's your emotion behind it? It's just sort of whatever I like.
And then you sent me the other one yesterday.
I did. And I think, it was Wednesday. So the article came out on Tuesday, the 16th of April. And the incident actually took place last year. I want to say it was last May. Yeah.
Right, okay. It's just gone to court. I thought it just happened.
No, it's just gone to court.
Oh, hence why the information's now out public. Got you.
So there was a nursery in Stockport where I want to say she was, 16 months? A baby, I'm not sure of her age.
I'm being
Has died in the setting. Well, later that night in hospital. But it was due to the treatment of the staff, a specific staff member, when she was sleeping.
She
was strapped to a beanbag, face down, swaddled. So this baby literally could not move and was crying and crying and crying basically until she...
I didn't realise. When I read it as strapped, I thought she'd just taken a beanbag and like strapped to it. I didn't realise there's actual type of chairs.
Yeah, I didn't know they were a thing.
No,
when I spoke to someone, they're like, yeah, like we've not, like, no, but never used them. And to be honest, when a child is sat up, facing you and engaging, it probably is quite a nice comfy chair for a little baby to be sat in.
I know,
but the thought of strapping a child to a beanbag horrifies me, and I just, no.
Especially face down, what are you thinking?
Oh, I don't even know. But there was a few things that stood out from this article for me, and it was safer sleeper training is so important, like ridiculously important, and everyone in a setting should be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, regardless if you have got sleepers in your room or not.
I mean, what the two most dangerous moments within settings are your sleeping and eating your meals and your meal times, and it can often become the most blasé moments of the day because you're trying to get lunches done, you're trying to get other things done in these moments.
Yeah, yeah.
When in reality, it's your most high risk moment.
And the importance of sleep checks, of actually you need to go to every single child in that sleep room. Either put your hand gently on their back to feel that they're still breathing, or you can put your, this isn't very good for the audio, but if you watch it, you'll know. You put your hand really close to a child's mouth and nose, and you can feel the breath. So you know that that child is still sleeping. It's still breathing.
It's actually carrying out a check, isn't it?
It's an actual check. Not just looking around the room.
No, it's not called a look in the room.
No, it's a sleep child check. And I am a stickler for these. It has to be done every 10 minutes or 5 minutes, depending on the child's age at that point.
The thing is, though, you could do it 10 million times, and that one time you don't,
something could happen.
And it's not just, oh, something's happened as in little Charlie's bumped his knee because I didn't open the gate properly or something.
Yeah.
The child
could die, yeah. There's things in that article, though, that have come out about the way that this member of staff's talked about this child, and it's giving me goosebumps now, like, thinking about it. It's not a nice read for anyone.
I think her pattern of behaviour and... what's the word to describe? Her pattern of behaviour and a treatment towards the child and the way she spoke to babies.
I know.
I mean, other than the fact she's clearly got her own, there's something going on. There's serious mental health issues going on. To treat children the way she has done and speak to them. Oh, you've got to go get a taxi, mate. And things like that. The quotes that she was saying to the child. You're doing my nut in today. To a baby.
Any chance of us being friends is gone. I just think,
And then the biggest thing for me of all of it, obviously you don't abuse children, and the neglect she shows is obviously a massive issue. Like, I don't think we need to talk about that. That's, you clearly don't do these things to young children. It's horrific. It's the other people in the setting and the importance of being able to whistleblow and know the procedures around whistleblowing. And even if you don't trust the people around you in terms of the setting, you have a responsibility to do something. That's why Ofsted are there. And there are so many ways that you scream for help.
Well, that was what I said to you, wasn't it? Because I said, this is something I think we need to share with our managers and others. Mm. And you said, why? Like, why do you think we need to do it? And I said, it's not only the safer sleeping, but it is the fact that it is everyone's responsibility.
Yep.
And I would like to think in every other setting, if a child was upstairs screaming or in a sleep room screaming for over an hour, somebody else is popping their head in to say, is everything all right in here? And then you notice that a child is underneath the blanket head to toe. I think somebody else did see, because there was a point in the article where this member of staff has said, oh, it's a blanket with holes in, she'll be fine. It just makes my blood boil. Even if it's your manager, your deputy manager, your room leader, your apprentice. Well, it said she was deputy manager and then it said she was deputy room lead. So I don't know what her role actually was.
Okay.
It doesn't matter who it is. If you think something is not right, you have to say something. Take the repercussions of a warning or a serious meeting coming in. But if you can stand up and say, what I did was for the safety and the safeguarding of this child... like, nobody's ever been in trouble for getting it wrong. And I'd rather get it wrong every single time than let a child suffer.
Yeah. And the truth of it is, this wouldn't have been a one-off incident. This is repeat behaviour, I would bet, over a long period of time. She didn't just come in one day and act very aggressively towards children and talk to them in this way.
No.
Like a one-off. I mean, this room has CCTV in it.
I know.
Like, so for her to act this way in front of a room full of cameras...
it's got to be common behaviour.
Like, it's got to be so ingrained and normal, that behaviour. You then question the other members of staff in that setting, because if they're not questioning that, are they also partaking in such behaviour?
Or are they worried about
the repercussions of this person, if that is to that level of a bully? But unfortunately, when it gets to that extent and that level, you've just got to do the right thing.
So I think from it, from us, it was a case of, if you see something, say something, because if you think a child is in danger at any point, you have, safeguarding is everyone's responsibility. It doesn't matter what your role in the setting is. You can have a cook in your setting. They have got every right to say something if they don't feel like a child is safe. If you've got groundsmen, it's their responsibility too. Nursery owners, directors, managers, area managers, accountants, teams, HR, whatever your role is, you have a responsibility to safeguard children. And it's only when things like this come to light and like news articles come around that we maybe talk about it more than we should. But we all know what it's like when you're put in a safeguarding situation, but you have to put the child first. You can't put your other people's opinions on you afterwards about it. That child, somebody in that baby room should have stood up and said something.
Yeah, and earlier,
and unfortunately, it reads that this woman is the only one in the wrong, but she's not. Everyone who's worked in and around the situations within that room hold responsibility, unfortunately.
And especially the management in that building.
Yeah.
Because it would be interesting, because we don't know. The people who worked in that room, and people could have come and gone, and put complaints in about this individual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For all we know, she's constantly working with new staff because people don't like the way she does. So without the information, we don't necessarily know that. But the people who definitely hold responsibility is obviously the person herself massively, but the management. Because the management in that setting, if there has been complaints, I mean, if there's not been complaints, are they monitoring it themselves? Are they vigilant across their own setting?
Are they checking CCTV regularly enough to actually say, hang on a minute, what's going on in here?
Who needs to check CCTV? Are they there? This person can't turn it on and off that well. If she's sticking children and strapping them to things upside down, her voice and the tone of how she communicates with children, like, you can't just turn it on and off all the time.
You know what? I bet she didn't have to phone the parents.
No, I'm sure she did.
That phone call, whoever made that phone call to those parents, oh my goodness.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how you do it, but somebody's got to.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a really sad one.
Horrific things in life happen.
They do.
Unfortunately, people pass away and children die way too young. Like, it can naturally happen and it's horrific.
Due to medical
conditions. And I wouldn't wish it up on anybody. No. It must be crippling.
Heartbreaking things to go through.
But when it's that level of negligence and just abuse, it's
and disgusting. It's also like when I sometimes don't think that staff in early years really think about how much trust parents put in the settings. Like, you are complete strangers.
Yeah.
That they're leaving their most prized possession with complete strangers. And when people are, oh God, they're a needy parent, they have every right to message you on whatever, or communicate with you in whatever way they can, as often as they want.
I mean, I feel guilty when we leave our dogs in kennels, so let alone put a child.
I know. So
yeah,
it's you've got to relate to it from a parent point of view, is that you are leaving your child, they are leaving their child, with people that they don't know.
No,
and how often would you do that?
And we're so involved in it, we know they'll be fine. You know what I mean?
Because we're working it, they'll be absolutely right. Out of it, yeah, but think about how that parent's feeling. And then you read articles like this and you think parents are going to be even more worried and ask even more questions about sleep routines and eating routines and food and all sorts.
And it's just happening. There was that nursery in Solihull. Was that last year or the year before?
Last year, I think.
There's a nursery in Solihull, wasn't there? Got shut down. I'm not sure if they did anything neglect-wise wrong on that one. That one sounded like the child passed in the cot, but not a lot of information's come
out. But then I'm sure it came out the sleep charts weren't done. Like, when Ofsted went in, no sleep checks had been recorded, at least.
Yeah, but
things like that, I don't know.
But this one's different, because this person's killed this child. Do you know what I mean? Whereas that, I don't know necessarily.
Weren't they being charged with something? There was four members of staff.
I know they got arrested.
They did get arrested.
And then they got released. I'm
sure in a year's time, we'll be talking about that one, because it will go to court. But that was a really, really sad article, and our hearts go out to that family, because it is just,
I can't imagine,
horrific. Yeah,
I can't imagine. And all that somber note.
Yeah, so sorry, that was a bit of a low one, but yeah, we thought we wanted to talk about it. It was when we read it, it was
it's horrible to talk about, but
had to,
it brings forward some important messages, and I would just relay it across your teams. The absolute important. It doesn't matter what job title anybody has. Safeguarding comes first.
Yeah.
And safeguarding's everybody's responsibility.
Everyone's, yeah.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter how little or small or how stupid or how often this person raised safeguard, you've got to treat everything with the utmost importance.
Yeah.
And even just the littlest things, like if this, for example, the safeguarding complaints around this individual were the way she talks to children, she's quite a bit abrupt, you can't just palm it off as, oh, that's who she is. She cares about the children, though. You know, no, she's worked for us for so many years. Doesn't matter, because one day she might, that pattern of behaviour, she might
goes too far.
And when she stamps, what should she do? She straps a child to a bloody thing, kills her.
So it down.
I think the question and the whole conversation comes around how it was for her to work in early years.
This evidence that's come out, it just was in the news article. So until the verdict is done, we don't actually know, because it could take, I think it said like four weeks, 4 months. I can't remember what it was.
It's quite damning though, isn't it?
No, I know. But at the end of the day, it might not be that it was, I don't know, but I think it could be. So I just want to put out there, like, it's not been confirmed what she did yet, and she's not been charged with anything yet.
Don't sue us.
Yeah, but reading from the surface, that is what we take from it. But once the verdict is given, I'm sure then we can discuss again.
Just those parents. Do you know what I mean?
Having to relive it all again now as well.
Yeah. I don't really know as a couple how you move on from that. I don't know if they've got other kids, I guess, but...
I don't know.
It's ruined their life. I mean, it's obviously a poor child, but like, it's ruined the parents' lives as well. Because as a mum, how do you... If she has other children, I'm sure now she can't leave them. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
So yeah, that was our sort of news of the week to start us off.
Upcoming classes, Emily.
We've been chatting about that for a while.
Upcoming classes then, Emily.
Upcoming classes.
What have you got?
So I have got a class all about supporting children's mental health. And the way I've swung this, actually, I've done it in quite a positive way. Okay. I've not wanted to talk about negative mental health. I've wanted to talk about positive mental health.
Okay, good endorphins.
Yes. So it's all about allowing children to the opportunities to create these good endorphins and the chemicals in the brain, and how we can give children the opportunities to create these positive ones, chemicals.
Do you know when anybody says endorphins, always things comes to my head?
What?
A picture of a dolphin, because it always sounds like people are saying good dolphins.
Oh, dear. There's no dolphins in the class. The class is about what we can do to help promote a positive mental health.
Right, okay.
When we think about mental health, or we think about mental health in general in terms of like adults and things, it's always a negative.
Right.
You always think, that person's struggling with their mental health.
Yeah, you think about anxiety.
Depression and things like that. Whereas I didn't want to do that. I've twisted it and thought, right, okay, how can we help children have a positive mental health? What can we put in place to support them to regulate themselves and create positive experiences and create those chemicals that's going to help their mindset twist to a positive?
Right, okay.
So that's kind of the stance I've taken on the class, because I didn't want to, personally, I didn't want to do a doom and gloom class, one of anxiety and depression. Wasn't for me. I suffer with anxiety. I know enough about it. End of. I want to make sure that what we're doing with young children is to support them to have a positive mental health, so that if they do come up against any negatives, barriers, traumas, that they have got the tools and staff around them have got the knowledge to support them.
So it's almost positive. It's almost like a toolkit to help practitioners and people work with children to promote positive
mental health.
Feeling good and happy.
Feeling good and happy. That's what we want.
Sounds like it'd be useful.
Hope so.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So that's kind of what's coming up for me, with some resources as well to go alongside.
And the odds are you'll be recording that the week the podcast comes out.
Next. Yeah.
So go live next week.
Hopefully so.
Fingers crossed. We can get...
Fingers crossed. In order. Things are quite busy at the moment, so fingers crossed. We will see. But you've already had a class from me this month.
Yep.
So...
What was your class this month?
Independence was this month.
Feels like a lifetime ago.
I know. So you have had a class from me this month, so within the next few weeks you'll have another one, hopefully, from myself.
Independence was massive as well. From the class I'm doing at the moment, which is that big Ofsted project, Independence was a huge aspect of it. And the amount of times Independence got pulled out from all the Ofsted reports was quite incredible. And the thing is, there's so many different facets to Independence. You know, you could talk about self-help all the way across to play.
Watch the video, there's loads of information.
And that's what I'll do, though. I will link across, because a load of the areas I pulled out, we already have videos in, so language development. We've got loads in terms of that type of thing. We've got storytelling
enabling
videos.
Enabling environments.
We've got independence. Introductions to neuroscience, emotional regulation and co-regulation. Like, we've got so much that links across to it. And I'm hoping...
So, Ben, what's your next class coming up? You just kind of told us.
Well, I've labelled it the big picture sort of thing. The big picture, so it's looking at all the Ofsted reports, but I've taken about... I've gone into detail, 200. I've probably looked up 300 to 400 Ofsted reports. All of that have happened since January of this year. So, yeah. Between January of this year and sort of the cut-off of March time. And the thing is with this class, I didn't want it to be a focus on the day, the inspection day, because I sometimes feel we scaremonger and we get so worked up about the day, the big O day.
It's too late by then anyway.
And it's just...
to make changes.
What's the point? I'd rather create something looking at Ofsted inspections, the data, what they're looking at, what nurseries are doing not so well, what nurseries are doing really well, what stopped good nurseries getting to outstanding, why outstanding nurseries achieved what they did, and really go through it, not just the stuff they have to work on, but looking through the report as a whole. What's the consistent wording? What's the themes running out of it? What's the data that we get from
this? Go on. From the Ofsted reports that you have read, has it been majority early years settings, not childminders, or have you mixed?
I think I'm going to spice it into a different one for childminders.
Okay.
Just because of the weight of it, and there's so much to this class is already 10 lessons long. And with those 10 lessons, I showed yesterday across social media. I say yesterday, actually wasn't yesterday because the podcast comes out on Monday. So I showed on Thursday last week across social media a little bit about the toolkit that goes along with the class and the lessons. And the toolkit is as much of a valuable resource as anything. So each lesson is broken down into a sector. So, for example, the first one is all about talking about vision. Mm-hmm. And then sector number two is talking about strategic teaching. And then it goes down into all the other areas like independence and your outdoor provision and all things like that. And within each sector, you get a sort of a document that comes with it that outlines sort of the key things that have come out of that sector, that lesson. So it's just an easy PDF that you can share with people, breaking down the key fundamentals that go into it.
Yeah.
So for every sector, I've come up with five key fundamentals. So we've talked about strategic teaching. There's five things that I've got in there that go in and support that and talk about it. And I break it down into that level of detail. And then so you get the PDF document that goes to support that.
Yeah.
So in total, you'll get 10 PDF documents that support each one of those lessons. And then supporting those documents, that's the information, that's the background, that's the research, that's my analyst data that I provided. Then to support that, you get two more documents. You get a review sheet, which will be a list of questions about that sector that you'll ask yourself and you'll go around your setting and review. So you can use that as a mock inspection document tool. You could use it as just a peer-on-peer review. You can use it in loads of different ways. You can even go around yourself and just look at your own room. You could get your manager to come out and look at your rooms or the setting as a whole, your sister settings. You know what I mean? There's loads of ways you could use that document and use it to like model self-evaluation, if you like. And then with that, you get a document around creating plans.
Yep.
Because there's no point doing all this work and reviewing and looking at everything and then not creating a plan that comes off it.
Yep.
So what I've provided is two, and you can print more off if you want to do more than two, but I would suggest two, because otherwise, if you were to do all 10 areas times by two, you'll have 20 plans. That's a lot.
That's too much.
That's too much. So I would look at the areas from your reviews and focus in on which areas that you need most to do work.
Yeah.
Every setting will be different. Some will be getting meal times, for example, really, really spot on and brilliant learning environments. Others won't. Others will be doing really well with their language and communication development. Others need to work on more other areas. So you see how it sort of it flexes in. And I'm hoping from this comes, I hope it provides a really valuable tool, self-reflection tool, and something you can use to develop your practice and develop your educational output, as opposed of just panicking around Ofsted and getting ready for quite a superficial day.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good for managers and leaders and anybody really in the setting to reflect on what they're doing. That's the best kind of way to describe the toolkit, I think, when what I've seen so far, what you've done.
And the nice thing is it's informative. It's informative from the sense of up-to-date information around Ofsted. It's educational because I delve in. I don't just tell you this area Ofsted are really hot on at the moment, do a review and then create a plan. I'm giving you that education. We are talking about these. We're talking about what good practice looks like. We're talking about ideas around it. We're talking about the fundamentals of it.
Yeah.
So you get information, you get education, and then you get a structured way of evaluating, reviewing, and producing a plan.
So if you want to know where you can find those classes when they come out, it is theearlyyearsnetwork.co.uk.
It is, yes.
And for your monthly subscription, you will have access to all of those things that we've talked about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the subscription is £4.99 a month.
Just £4.99 a month.
Just £4. Cheap as chips.
The rate this is going, it's cheaper than a coffee soon.
I know. So, yeah, that is what is coming up.
That's the big picture.
And Ben also did a poll on Instagram about which other class they'd like to see. And the winner was STEM.
It was. So I gave three options. I gave STEM in the early years. I gave motivation and sort of the neuroscience behind it. And inquiry-based learning. I was really hoping inquiry-based learning was going to win.
I know. You'd already planned that.
The class is planned. The class is just, I just need to sit down and record it. It's ready, rock and roll. But that will come after STEM. So STEM will come next. So STEM
in the early years. Tell us, what does STEM stand for? STEM.
It's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
And how we can link that into the early years. Now, it's something that I think everybody kind of does, but it's not dedicated to.
The thing is, it sounds quite scary. Well, it sounds stupid, actually, doesn't it? First of all, just go around saying STEM. Yeah. But it can be quite, I think it's like, I think mathematics is in the title. So it's like things like mathematics where it's quite daunting. And I think it makes people think of when they were in school and negative memories and the idea of science and being bored. And like, for a lot of people, it brings back almost like PTSD, doesn't it? But it doesn't have to be that. And for me, it's actually the most exciting way of delivering. And the reason why I put STEM, motivation, and inquiry-based learning together is actually because they're all very much related.
They do, yeah. They kind of sit with each other a little bit, don't they?
It's almost, I'm going to create it in a way that's a bit of a series with overlaps. So when I talk about the STEM class, there will be sections in there, not as in much detail as a class on a standalone, but we will talk about motivation because a lot of people will say, right, STEM's great, but my kids don't play with it, or they play with it in a completely different way, or they're just not engaged. And that boils down to their motivational levels as well as their understanding of it. And equally, inquiry-based learning then deals with all of it.
Yes, it does.
It's about how we can engage children to be curious. I mean, we talk about curiosity a lot in the early years, and a lot of curiosity and the concepts of curiosity come around loose parts, natural open-ended materials. Yep. That is sort of how we view curiosity in the early years.
When there's actually different ways to open a child's natural ability to be curious in different ways, and STEM is just another way to...
Or another way to phrase it and look at it is inquiring, asking questions. And that's when I get into the class, and anybody who watches the class, it'll probably come out in the next 3 or 4 weeks. That is the big thing about it. It's about phrasing questions, pitching questions to children, and building around that. Because we spoke about this off air the other day, didn't we, when we talked about, for example, farming. You could pitch a question around farming. Where does bread come from?
Yeah.
Or you could talk about science. What is a planet? And then from that one question alone, instead of looking at topics and themes like nurseries.
You could open lots of different doors to that, and your activities can be linked to the question, but also based around children's interests. So if you've got children that are obsessed with books and storytelling, you can create and do a helicopter story about the farm and what happens.
Or the spaceman.
The characters, or the spaceman, whatever it is you're looking at, what the question is. But then if you've got children that are really into their textures and malleable play, then you can use resources to create a tough tray or a messy activity that links different things to the question.
Because if you're talking about bread, you could get the resources you need for bread. You can put flour down, you could put yeast in. And then you do another class where you cook bread together and then you eat it later on. And
you can get a microscope and you can look at flour or the wheat, whatever is underneath, and talk about that. So lots of different things that
you could look at how bread's grown. You could look at weather, the different conditions necessary. You could go to, you could visually via a computer go to another part of the world and look at where it's grown. And
so it's all those critical thinking, problem solving skills that will be able to come into those sort of activities, and not thinking about it as, oh God, we've got to do a science experiment every day, or we've got to, but it's introducing the 21st century issues and technologies and things like that into children's learning from a young age.
It's asking questions. That's basically the premise of it. It's asking questions and then exploring and investigating
as
to find those answers.
The answers are,
and through their play, and through times we spend together, conversations,
yeah,
we discover. And I think that's what it's all about. It's
one
about
thing where we were doing research about it was the fact that it's interesting about introducing these sorts of ideas and concepts and plays to both girls and boys.
Yeah.
Because like we talked about stereotypes the other day, stereotypically engineering and things like that is usually men.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually exciting and inviting young girls as well as young boys to partake in those sort of activities and questions and querying those different things is a really important part of it as well.
Yeah, one of my favourite on social media, there's, I can't remember the girl's name, there's a lady who does neuroscience and she talks about all neuroscience topics. I think she's Scottish but lives in Canada. I think she does research in Canada or something like that.
Wow.
And it's just interesting to talk about. So there is a bit of a stigma, I think, sometimes about engineering, for example, being a man's thing, but that's really false.
Yeah.
And I just think through this class, what I'll do is I'll break down motivation, I'll break down inquiry, the importance of it, and then we'll dive into each STEM. So you've got science, technology, engineering, maths.
Yeah.
We'll break down some of the ways we can introduce these to children, what we can pull from it, how we can pitch questions, and then from those questions, create activities, conversations, inquiry, and go from there. And the more you do it and the more you adapt to it, you'll be amazed of how you can proliferate learning and activity. And even you can even talk about space and then bring it into the home and parent partnership. You know, go out and look at the stars.
The stars.
Or what you see, take photographs. And it's about creating children who are just interested in the world.
And curious to get out there.
I
don't use
the word curious,
questions.
But do you know what I'm trying to say? And it's about, and this all starts with, and the biggest hurdle you'll have is ourselves. Because the older we get, we lose our curiosity.
Yeah, the less we want to find out the answers sometimes as well.
The greatest minds in the world have actually what we would label a quite a childish perception of everything.
Yeah.
You look at someone like Albert Einstein, probably always asked why or queried or wondered.
It's when you get those children that this is the blah, blah, whatever the statement is, why?
Yeah, why?
And you're like, why? What? That's what you want to do. Like, let's find out why together.
But as adults, what do? When children do that?
Just because.
Yeah, we knock it out of them.
Yeah.
We take that. We talk about curiosity so much. Yeah, we're almost, as adults, we're actually curiosity killers.
Yeah, and we just say, because I said so, end of, like, that's it.
Done. And then we go to school, and instead of building on that curiosity and that investigation and exploring the world and the possibilities of what can happen, we instead tell them facts and facts and facts and facts, and this is just the way the world is. The fact that we give them science textbooks that are actually quite often laced with in factuals and things that aren't correct.
Ben, now, without giving too much of your class away, we don't want to go into what you're, because we don't want to give away what you're going to be doing. But this could actually link to a very interesting program that we watched that you have been dying to talk about on the podcast.
Yes.
So if anybody's got Netflix, other streaming services are available.
Well, actually, no, it is only available on Netflix, though.
This program is, yes, but you can watch other programs on other things.
You can.
It's called Three Body Problem.
Not Three Body Parts. There's quite a lot of people around us keep calling it.
You're the only person that's calling it that.
My mum did as well, actually.
Because you told her that's what it's called. Three Body Problem. Now, it's about scientists.
Oh, no spoilers.
No spoilers, but it's about scientists.
It is.
And they are asking the question of why and what the fuck all the time.
I think most of the time it's what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. But that is them being so curious and the interest that coming from there. So if you've not watched it, watch it.
That is the thing about science. Science, we often think, is a matter of fact, but actually what science often does is disproves previously what we thought was fact.
Yeah. Because there's a point in it where they are experimenting on something and they don't know if it's going to work, and it's clearly been something that's been in the process for a long time, and then it does work, and then they have to trial it in a different way, in a bigger scale. And
God, that sounds like COVID vaccinations, what you just described.
It does, but it's not. And it does work, and it's just, it's so...
It's a bit of a mindfuck, is that?
Yeah,
it is. A bit of a...
I was disappointed with the end of season one because it's not actually been approved for series two yet. And if we don't get series two, I'm going to be livid.
And it might not be to start 2026. So I bought the book.
So Ben has bought the book, so we can find out what's going to happen.
And it's created by the same directors from Game of Thrones.
And you can tell.
And half the cast is Game of Thrones.
Purely from the intro. It's not as long-winded as the Game of
Or the Game of Thrones one was quite good because you went to all the cities across Westeros and you saw it all and obviously went further.
Yeah.
But the House of Dragons series then is just boring. You know,
yeah,
it's too flowing blood,
but
isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Three body problem, it's similar, but just very condensed.
Less shagging as well.
Significantly less sex than Game of Thrones, yeah.
And less family
mixing. Wouldn't have fit with the storyline, to be fair, of this one.
I wouldn't put it past them.
But yeah, that was a really good one. And that is actually come to mind when we talk about STEM and science and inquiry and curiosity. So if as an adult you want to question the world a little bit and what could go on, give it a watch. And it will spark some questions for you.
And that would be my biggest thing. If you yourself are really curious about investigating something, a topic, a question,
mm-hmm.
that will rub off on the children. Role modelling. And that'll build into motivation. And then that'll build off the activities.
Yeah.
And that'll stem. And if you can make it relevant, we talk about global warming and things like that. Sure, that's often the one we pick on. But there's loads of things you could talk about.
You could.
And it's endless. And you can introduce children to things that you probably think are too complex for them.
Yeah.
It's how you introduce them to it. If you sit a child down and try and talk about molecules and atoms, and so it's just going to go over the top of the head.
Yeah,
but you can discuss that in a much more simplistic way. I mean, even the other day, we were in the office and we were talking about, not me and you, but someone else who works in the office, and we've got a kettle that is see-through. And we were just talking, and we take it as a matter of fact, almost blasé about it, the fact that when you see water boil, the amount of energy running through it to make water move.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. We sort of just take it for granted that, oh yeah, we understand when the kettle's close to boiling, it starts bubbling up everywhere.
Yeah.
But it's that, it's all to do with that release of energy.
It's because you can see it for our see-through kettle.
Yeah, it's we heat it, it gives it more thermal energy, and it releases that energy in a way of, I mean, we release energy through respiration, whereas water bubbles, it moves quite literally. But for children, that's mind-blowing. You know, obviously you've got to be careful with playing with boiled water, of course. But it's little things like, again, take an egg, smash an egg, and it's runny substance and it goes over, it's liquid. But if you put it in water for 7 minutes and do the same thing, it'll become a hard substance.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
And we take that for granted. But these are the types of things.
Children need to learn. Yeah. So.
Go STEM.
That's us this week. A bit of a mishmash, a bit of everything. Let us know what you thought about it, us talking about sort of the news articles and then upcoming things on our platform as well. Ben's probably favourite episode. He's got to talk about two of his favourite TV shows. So
we talk about Star Wars.
And that is us done for the day. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We really appreciate it. Give us a rating on whatever podcast.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get a few more ratings. We must have got a bad one on Spotify recently.
How rude.
Somebody gave us 1 star. I'm not sure what we've done to upset somebody out there.
Sorry, let us know.
Somebody gave us 1 star. And go check out the LES Network as well.
Yeah, go and check out the platform. Loads of different classes to get your team motivated and trying something new in the setting.
Yeah, and we're focused on more and more now of providing not just lessons and information, but meaningful things that you can use and practical solutions to training and development. So, enjoy the rest of your week.
Have a good one, guys, and we'll see you next Monday.
Bye.
Bye.